Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Promoting peace, liberty, and prosperity around the clock. LibertyTalk.fm.
Welcome to Living the Solution with Dr. Elena George. Today I have one of my good friends on, someone who I respect and admire, and someone who is helping people understand what's going on the front line. This is Dr. Chris Held. She's an ophthalmologist, and she's the president of the American Association of Physicians and Surgeons. And Chris has been, it's been a while since you've been on the show, but I wanted to have you back because we are now entering a very important part of our season, and that's election year. We are talking a lot about Medicare for All and all of these things that are being told to patients that you can get something for nothing. It's going to be basically free. Healthcare is a right. All these things that are, I think, driving people, quite frankly, off of a healthcare cliff. And I wanted to have you on because you're on the front line and you really understand what people need to look at and how this really has unfolded. So I want to thank you so much. I know how busy you are. Like, you're like me, you're in private practice. So you're on the front line taking care of patients. So I really appreciate your time.
Well, Elena, I thank you so much for giving me this blessing and opportunity to be on with you because I just have so much admiration and respect for you because the time and the commitment that you take to get out there and develop and this relationship with your audience and educate them, just like you have a relationship with your patients. And, you know, ever since the first day I met you, I just knew we were like kindred spirits and sisters in this because, you know, we have lived our lives with this calling we have to serve our patients. And, you know, that patient-physician relationship is just something like no other. And it's one thing to experience it from the patient side, and it's another thing to experience it from the physician side. It's just, it's there with you all the time. When you get up in the morning and go to bed at night, you're thinking about your patients and trying to take care of them. And it has become increasingly challenging. And, you know, I think since you and I trained, it's really becoming harder and harder to keep all of these outside interlopers out of our relationship with our patients. They're really making it very difficult to practice ethical Hippocratic medicine where the patients come first. And that's how we trained, and it's been really, really tough to continue to fight this battle. So I thank you so much for all you do and for the privilege to be on with you. Thank you.
It's my honor. Now, I know that there's been a lot of people speaking about healthcare policy. And the thing that strikes me the most about the people who are on the front line with the loudest megaphone is that none of them are physicians. They don't understand how to run a small business. They don't understand patient care at all. But they're telling us that we should like becoming, quite frankly, workhorses and slaves to a system that will run how we treat our patients. What's your take on Medicare for All? Is this really the answer to help our healthcare problems in this country, in your opinion?
Well, you know, Medicare for All is the biggest scam. If that is to ever come to fruition, it will do exactly the opposite of what people think it will do. So, you know, when we think about Medicare, you know, the American people are so smart and so compassionate. We want to take care of everyone. You know, when you go back to the mid-60s when they came up with Medicare, which is the safety net or the medical plan for seniors, and Medicaid, which is the safety net for the poor, the truly sick and disabled that can't afford care, that's the safety net. Well, that we developed those things with the idea, the pie in the sky idea, that they would be great and they would be work and take care of people. And as we know, over the ensuing next 50 years, there's just been a domino effect of, you know, things that have made it actually not work. from cost to denial of care and so on. Mm-hmm. So right now, let's talk about Medicare and Medicare for All. So Medicare was created for people 65 and older. Well, if we truly took that government-run plan and applied it to everyone in the United States, guess who goes to the end of the line? The seniors, the people that it was created for. You know, number one, it's extraordinarily expensive. And when they've tried to look at the cost of this, you know, we'll go from healthcare being $3.2 trillion a year to, you know, a 32 at least extra trillion dollars over the next 10 years, which means you'd be doubling it. And what it does, too, if you look at Bernie Sanders' plan, there's a House plan that's the companion plan to it. And if you look at those plans, the day after Medicare for All becomes law, all private health insurance is illegal. So now all of a sudden, when you look at half of the American people, 150 million people that get their insurance through an employer-sponsored plan through their employment, that'll no longer exist. That'll be gone. And we'll all be on this one big giant government plan called Medicare for All. So when everyone in the country is thrown on a plan that there's no money to cover, what's going to happen? They're going to have to decide who's going to get that care. And if you look at, for example, recently everyone has seen this video of what Michael Bloomberg, one of the presidential candidates, has said and looked at his philosophy about healthcare, and he uses as the example, you know, if there's not enough money and not enough resources, if you have a 95-year-old guy come in with cancer, you just have to say, have a great day, have a great life, you're not getting treatment. Well, you know, he says that right now about a 95-year-old, but what about if resources are even more scarce than he thinks and things more expensive? Suddenly, that becomes an 85-year-old, and suddenly that becomes then a 75-year-old. And you know, Elena, that brings us back to the philosophical divide. So you and I believe in the Hippocratic Oath and putting patients first and doing everything for the patient. The other side of that philosophical divide does not. Mm-hmm. They, in fact, believe that the Hippocratic Oath is too expensive. And, you know, one of the architects of Obamacare, and you and I always talk about the Affordable Care Act because we know what a horrible fail it has been. Well, one of the architects, Dr. Ezekiel Emanuel, who was a key advisor on the Affordable Care Act, literally laments that doctors take the Hippocratic Oath too seriously, that we, quote, take it as an imperative to do everything for the patient, regardless of the cost or effect on others. So Ezekiel Emanuel, who actually, you know, was huge influence on the Affordable Care Act, believes that as long as doctors are in charge, cost control is not possible. He believes true reform includes redefining doctors' ethical obligations and that medical students should be trained to provide socially sustainable, cost-effective care instead of thinking about their own patients' needs. That's a far cry from what we believe in wanting to take care of our patients. And, you know, the other thing is, remember, he wrote an article in The Atlantic, Why I Hope to Die at 75, an argument that society and families and you will be better off if nature takes its course swiftly and promptly. So that, you know, if you put that philosophy with what Michael Bloomberg is saying, you come to find out that there's these other groups of people that believe totally differently. You know, they believe that life can be quantified. They have these things called quality adjusted life years, and care will not go to, if you have Medicare for All, the people that aren't going to get it are Medicare age patients. They'll be at the end of the line. You know, the other thing that Ezekiel Emanuel did was he created a rationing plan. He has an article in Lancet where they talk about the complete life system.
Right.
And they believe in allocation of scarce medical resources that they go to people between the ages of basically 15 and 40 or 45. They believe before the age of 15, there's not a society has not yet invested enough in you that you're kind of, you can be put to the end of the line. But by 15, there's already been enough societal investment. And then after 40 to 45, forget it. You're too much of a drag on the system. And this is scary.
Yeah.
This is scary. And this is what people are saying they want. And, you know, I just today had a patient that she came to live in Texas. Her mom's from Canada. Her mom was with her. And they're having to wait weeks to get neurosurgical care, weeks to get an MRI, weeks to get an MR venogram, and then weeks to get back in with the neurosurgeon. And I said, you'd think we were Canada. And the mom looked at me and laughed, and she goes, no, except you would, except that Canada is months. You know, so yeah. We've gone from when you and I trained to saying, let's admit you or let's order this test. Let's right. get you done. Let's get the surgery done. Let's get you taken care of. That's how we were trained.
Exactly.
And now we're accepting. Instead, these accountable care, I call them accountable dare organizations, not accountable care organizations. We're literally sitting there and waiting for insurance companies to delay and deny care and just saying, you know, okay, I'm not and you're not. But many physicians are resigning themselves to saying, you know, we'll see if the insurance company will approve this. And see if you can get or what you can get. We've mm-hmm. had this total reversal of who's running the ship.
Agreed. And it's wrong. It's really wrong. And I think it's messed with the morale of physicians. I think it's an underpinning of physician dissatisfaction and, unfortunately, physician suicide, because your ability to be an advocate for your patient is being thwarted on all fronts, whether that's the government, if you're taking Medicare patients, whether if it's a hospital, if you're an employee of a hospital, if you're in private practice, just keeping your bottom line self-solvent based on getting paid for what you do. It's an all, you know, it's an onslaught. There's no other way to describe it. On that note, let's take our first break because I want to come back and delve into this a little bit deeper. You're listening to Medicine on Call. Welcome back to Living in Solution. This is Dr. Elena George, and we're speaking with Dr. Chris Held. She is the president of the American Association of Physicians and Surgeons and somebody who has to take care of patients. This is not somebody who's an administrator and who is removed from patient care, and it's all about, you know, I guess, bottom line clinical – well, it's not even clinical. It's just bottom line decision making. I don't think they take clinical life of physicians and patients into account. I mean, every day we're dealing with hospitals. I know you're – ever across the country, and if you're taking call in an emergency room, if you're covering a hospital for any reason from an emergency perspective, this is a day and night situation where before, if you had an issue, you had coverage. You have whole specialties that aren't represented and people rolling up into the hospital. It could be a GYN issue. It could be a neurosurgical issue, and it may not be a neurosurgeon or a GYN or anybody on call, and they have to ship you somewhere else. This system is broken, but they want to double down on the worst parts of our healthcare system and tell us we should like it. Medicare for All doesn't fix any of those problems, does it?
It really doesn't. Medicare for All makes it worse. And when you think about this, the way that they say that they've changed, so we were going on personalized care. They now are looking at population-based care mm-hmm. or this team-based care. And so, you know, if you're a very active, viable 80-year-old, your doctor would know that. And your doctor would say, you know what, you're healthy enough, you're with it enough, you're going to get this surgery, you're going to get this hip. When they're looking at population-based, they're going to look and say, well, most people at age 80, they really aren't healthy enough to undergo this operation. So if you look at what they've got in store for you, it's a lot of what we call palliative care. And mm-hmm. if you look at the Affordable Care Act, if you look at what's called comparative effectiveness research, if you look at this data gathering and some of the things that they even had way back in the American Reinvestment and Recovery Act with all of this EMR and data collection, they said, okay, we won't admit to the American people that we're going to ration care. But what we're going to do is we're going to do this thing called comparative effectiveness research. So we're going to compare any treatment to palliative care, basically pain management, regardless of cause. So they'll say, no, we're not going to ration you if you need a hip. But what we're going to do is we're going to look at everybody that's 85, and we're going to say, if these people get a hip and these people get pain management, how much does that cost, and how comfortable are they compared to how long they're going to live? And I call it the reefers and rockers program. You know, instead of giving you a hip, they're going to say, here's some medication to make you comfortable because that is more cost effective.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at there's a agency, if you look at the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services, there's a thing called the CMMI, the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Innovation. Now, wouldn't you think that innovation means the cure for cancer, the cure for Alzheimer's, the cure for heart disease, the cure for AIDS, new blood, a new heart? And then we would lower medical costs because we'd have cures for everything. We wouldn't, you know, we'd be having innovation.
Mm-hmm.
Well, guess what? The new head of Center for Medicare and Medicaid Innovation, is he a doctor? No. He's a 30-something-year-old guy that was successful in making a profit on home palliative care.
Oh, wow.
Now, what does this tell you? That is now the government and the Medicare for All view of innovation. So okay. They're looking at us and they're saying that Medicare spends all of this money at the end of life. They're not going to give you a new hip or a new heart, or if you have a gallbladder, you're going to get pain management and palliative care. And this is what they're looking at. And I'm not making this up. This is the real deal. And if you look at how they talk about value-based, like you have to have quality. They talk about quality and value, and they score doctors now. You know, a lot of people disregarded this law called MACRA, the Medicare Access and Chip Reauthorization Act. Well, MACRA has in it a scoring system and this thing called MIPS, Merit-Based Incentive Payment System. And I talked earlier, I said accountable care organizations, I call them accountable care organizations because they see how much care they can deny before the patients die and there's an outcry. And I'm talking about insurance companies here.
Mm-hmm.
But if you look at the Medicare, the MIPS, the Medicare Incentive Payment System, they score doctors. And this is what – so let's think about how you get to be a good doctor. You have to get a score of 100. It's kind of like the Chinese, the communist social scoring system where they score their citizens. But there's one category called cost, and the doctors that get 10 points are the doctors that spend the least on their patients. The doctors get 0 points are the doctors that spend the most on their patients. So you're a good doctor if you don't spend money on your patients, meaning you don't work them up, you don't treat them. So that's kind of perverse and counterintuitive. Mm-hmm. Anyway, there's a Medicare payment advisory system, and it's this 17-member committee that's supposed to tell Congress, this is how things are working with Medicare. And they looked at this and they said, it is inequitable. It's burdensome. It will not improve care for Medicare beneficiaries. It will not move Medicare or doctors towards high value care. If it's supposed to reward and penalize doctors or clinicians based on the value of care they provide, it will not do so. They said it needs to be repealed. And plus, we're talking about money. There's no money to treat patients. Well, just implementing this system costs $1 billion the first year from the government. And it costs individual doctors $40,000 to $50,000 a year, billions of dollars just implementing a system that doesn't do what it says it's going to do instead of spending that money on patients. Well, guess what Congress has done? Do you think they repealed it? The MedPAC said repeal it. What does government do?
Nothing.
They're not repealing it.
Yeah.
I got a thing from my, you know, I get stuff on the line all the time from AMA and the American Academy of Ophthalmology. You probably get it from ENT. This is how you get your MIPS money. This is how you get your MIPS score. Everybody's making money off of these weird scoring systems, data reporting, all this money that should go to taking care of patients is going to support nonsense that harms patients.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what in the world? So when you take what's already going on that's bad and apply that to everyone, my gosh, it is going to be an absolute disaster. And look what's happened with medications. Now we have 80 to 90% of our medications being made in China. Now, all of a sudden, we're faced with this coronavirus crisis. All of our meds are made in China. What's going to happen now when they are hit with this horrible flu? They're all quarantined. Mm-hmm. People can't go to work. They can't make our drugs. Now we have patients that already we've got drug shortages. Already we have horrible drug cost issues. Patients can't afford their drugs. And now we're so dependent on China, and now we can't get our medications. This is what happens when we let huge insurance corporations get money from government. Government is subsidizing these insurance corporations. You know, the Medicare patients are now in all of these, quote, Medicare Advantage plans. Basically, those are big HMOs. And the government gives these corporations money to ration care for Medicare patients. Well, they are making money hand over fist because they get the money. And how do they keep the money? By denying and delaying care. And every day that they deny your care or delay your care, their money stays your money because it's taxpayer money that went to the government and then went to Medicare and went to subsidize them. Every day that they delay and deny care, the money stays in the bank and they get interest. Every med, and what happens to the patient, Elena? We go without.
Exactly. You know, Chris, I want people to think about that while we take our second break, because this is the crux of the problem. And we're going to talk about the solutions in the next break or in the next segment. Well, we'll be right back. You're listening to Living in Solution.
If you've tried taking over-the-counter medications but still have problems with nasal congestion, recurrent sinus infections, sinus headaches, or a dry mouth when you wake up in the morning, why not fix the problem? From natural integrative treatment to minimally invasive surgery, Peachtree ENT Center will work with you to find the solution that works best for you. Call 404-591-9100 today to make an appointment or visit us at peachtreeentcenter.com, because Peachtree ENT Center is where patient care counts.
Welcome back to Living in Solution with Dr. Elena George. Before the break, we were really getting into the crux of the problem. It's about denial of care. It's about really who stands to gain. And the sad part is the insurance companies, and in some instances the government, quite frankly, will gain by denying you care. And I agree with you. This whole movement towards palliative care is not a joke. It started when they started paying doctors for conversations about palliative care. They'll pay for that office visit, but they may not pay for the hip replacement. So it's driving the system in a way that is rewarding denial, rewarding palliative, rewarding withdrawal of care, and really helping somebody. And I have a patient, or actually I've met somebody whose mom was put in hospice because she had a cardiac issue. They had to discharge her from hospice because she actually recovered. So, I mean, they didn't even try to help her. She had to go for a second opinion, and now she's doing well. But if you're not savvy, can you imagine how many family members don't know any better, take the advice of the doctor that, oh, there's nothing we can do, just make your loved one comfortable. Don't even give them the option of true health care. And the hospital is complicit. I mean, they're not going to stop the doc from doing that. You'll probably be considered to be a disruptive physician if you start talking to your patients about, hey, maybe you want to have something, a treatment that's more aggressive. This is a big pressure against giving health care, it sounds like.
Well, it really is. And additionally, they only want you to prescribe medications that are on their list, that they make a profit from. You aren't going to get the wide range of choices that may be available to you. And I agree, you have to have an advocate now when you're in the hospital, because you're going to go in and be a certain age and they're going to talk to you about, withdrawal of care or not having care as opposed to going forward aggressively. And you're right about physicians that try to buck the system and go against this population-based care as being labeled as disruptive. And it's really quite concerning. And if you look at the cost of what's happening on outpatient situation. If a patient can't afford their meds, or if they, you know, think about an older patient, it's difficult to get to the pharmacy. You go there, they deny it, you can't have it, you just go without. Think about diabetics who can't get their insulin. You just go without. Or the insurance companies that now they want to make more money, they say you have to mail order it.
Mm-hmm.
And so now you can't go to your pharmacy. It comes in the mail. It's been hot. It's been damaged. There's costs associated with all of these. Basically, I think these are experiments on the American people. They don't work. So people are being harmed physically. And the cost of non-adherence, if you're a diabetic and you're rationing your insulin, you're going to lose your leg. You're going to lose your vision. You're going to lose your kidneys. You're going to die. There's young people that can't afford health insurance now. And they can't afford their meds. And they're going without care and rationing it. And the cost of that to society and to work and production, that's far worse than what they quote-unquote are saving by doing these untested things. And the people that are profiting all the way to the bank are when, you know, the pharmacy, CVS buys Aetna, the insurance company, and their pharmaceutical benefits manager. Those guys are all raking it in on Wall Street in unbelievable numbers.
Well,
so we've got to look at what we're trying to do.
What happened to antitrust? I mean, this is collusion and cartel, and you have the people who, you know, making the medication in bed with the people who dispense it. You know, carving out a sweetheart deal that actually gets rid of competition, and it's always pressured to be higher. It's never in the patient's interest. So I can understand maybe if it was a lower cost and you were giving a patient a discount, it is not what happens. It gets more expensive, and they just take more cream off the top with impunity. And there's nobody, but you know, I think Congress is also complicit. What are they doing? And the president did try to do something, but Congress is doing zero.
Right. They have tried to do things. But, you know, there's about $250 billion minimum a year that these middlemen, these pharmaceutical benefit managers, PBMs, are taking in the cream off the top. So if you take even 1% of, or 10%, let's say they're going to take 10% of $250 billion lobbying, that's $25 billion right now. $25 billion goes a long way on Capitol Hill to influence a lot of people, while the rest of us are in the trenches working, trying to take care of our patients.
Mm-hmm.
So we need transparency. Some of the really important things that they're coming up with, this is exciting, you know, they are talking about transparency, and we've got to have that. We've got to expose these money games in medicine where it's like a markup discount game. So, you know, you go to the hospital and they say, oh my gosh, your bill was $100,000. Well, really, in reality, what the insurance company is going to pay is a fraction of that.
Mm-hmm.
You have to ask, what's happening with all this money in the middle? And I think it's very high level money laundering. And we've got to expose that with transparency. And, you know, talk about medications. You have to, in order to get your drug on the formulary, on the list, you've got to basically pay to play now. And they do all these secret sole source contracts. They pay to get it on there. And so what happens? If you're a drug company, you invent the best drug in the world, but you have to pay all this money to get it on, you know, CVS, get it to CVS, you're going to have to raise the cost of your drug. So it's a cyclical problem. The drug cost goes up. The patients can't get the drugs. And then it's too expensive to make generics. We have drug shortages. Nobody can get their meds. It's ridiculous. So we've got to go back and have solutions such as get more people being able to make generics, get people being able to get medications directly from their doctor at their office at cost.
Agreed.
And, you know, if you look at models of direct patient care like Josh M. Baer with Atlas MD in Kansas, a patient for $50 a month can get all their care from their primary care doctor, and it includes your medication. And, there, you know, you can go to Surgery Center of Oklahoma. You can pay directly and have your surgery for a fraction of the cost of what you're going to pay through the false price of your insurance. You know, they trick you.
Mm-hmm.
The bill, you go to have your operation and you say, my gosh, my hip surgery would have cost me $100,000. Thank goodness I had my insurance and only cost me $40,000. When in reality, you can go and pay direct pay and have it for a fraction of the cost. And this is what we need to do. We need to have the American people who are smart, instead of having the money go to the middleman, instead of having the money go to insurance corporations and the, you know, CVSs and Aetnas and everybody in the world, let the money go to the patients and let the patients choose where they're going to get the best. Let them be determined on what's the value of their money. Do they want to have a stent in their heart, or do they want to have pain med in a rocking chair? Do they want to get their hip fixed, or do they want to have a reefer and a rocker? Let the patient decide. Let the patient and their family be their own advocate and decide what surgery they want. What do they want to do, and what's the best value? Do they want to go to Surgery Center of Oklahoma and have it done for $2,000, or do they want to go to the hospital that's on their list and have it done for $50,000, where, you know, $40,000 are effectively laundered in this medical gaming system? So we've got to have solutions that empower the patient. And there are bills out there, as opposed to Medicare for All. There's the Healthcare Freedom Act that my Congressman Chip Roy has. There's the Personalized Care Act, Senator Cruz, and there's a Personalized Care Act that gives the money, you know, allow you to take your money. And instead of just giving it away every month in premiums, like my husband and I were both self-employed. We spent $20,000 a year last year. We had to pay it for our premiums because we're not old enough for Medicare. And that's how expensive it is. And instead, we could have put that, you know, we didn't, that's money that we had to live on, that we had to put in that. We could have instead put that in a health savings account and use that to buy direct care that we saw as value when we needed it, and then have a backup catastrophic plan. We've got to fix this.
Well, that's giving the
plan. There is a way.
I think there is, but I think that's in the system that we're under. That's giving the patient way too much power. And quite frankly, I love what your congressman has proposed, but ultimately that would take forever getting through the system of graft and cronyism that is Congress. I think one thing can be done that would break the entire system. Just go price transparency. Everybody has to list their prices, period, end of story.
Yep.
And that would Congress, bypass all the back, you know, backroom deals and all the money that's been foisted, you know, or I should say, you know, I guess shoveled into Congress. That cuts that money train, because when you know that a CT is 200 versus 2,000, if I go independent to an independent facility, and I go to the hospital, I'm going to pay 10 times more. Which one would you choose? And then you have competition. This is a system that's built to break competition. They don't want competition. You and I are a problem because we're independent. We serve our patients. We have a fiduciary responsibility to our patients. And we're not playing games. If I see somebody, I tell them what the cost is before I do anything. Good luck doing that in a hospital-based, you know, ENT office or ophthalmology office. It's never going to happen. And patients appreciate that. But patients have to take responsibility. They have to stop wanting something for nothing. I'm done with that. How can you expect me, after training for 10, 20 years, to be the best I can be to take care of you, to just, you know, just get pennies and like it, and it's a right, and you have to do it. And I say, that's not how it works, people. If anybody thinks that's how it's going to work, I got news for them. On that note, let's take our last break. You're listening to Living the Solution. Welcome back to Living the Solution. You know, Dr. Held, do you have a website that people can go to and learn more about what we're talking about?
Well, there is a lot of information on aapsonline.org, the Association of American Physicians and Surgeons online.org. There is a wealth of information there. And, you know, patients can join for free and ask any question, get as much information as you want. And then on Twitter, if people want to engage on Twitter, I'm at Chris Held MD or KKS Held. And there's a lot of information there, and I'm happy to tell people where they can find more information, because I agree with exactly what you just said. The patient has got to speak up. We have got to stop being victims as patients. You are paying this insurance company, and if they deny you, you demand that they honor their half of the commitment. You know what? They are trying to replace physicians. Like you said, you know, they're paying physicians so low. Remember that they talk about the cost of healthcare. Actually, look, transparency is so critical. When I do cataract surgery and insurance would pay or Medicare $500, you know, at some point they pay you so low, you can't do it anymore. And that's one of the way they ration.
Sure.
The other thing is they charge, they say it's a non-covered service and make it so expensive patients can't afford it. So there are ways that these outside entities ration. But a patient has responsibility to say, I need to get what I'm paying for. They need to have transparency. And they need to see what we really do and we can really do at a low cost for them. And, you know, people tell me, oh, well, you know, you're out of Medicare or you're not taking insurance and you must be in a wealthy part of town. Mm. Let me tell you, I'm the one who sees the hardworking people that can't afford the premiums on the Affordable Care Act, that can't afford to be insured. I'm the one taking care of them because while they can't afford their premiums and their deductibles, they can afford my direct care. And I'm sure it's the same way with you. I had a patient the other day that said, had severe eye problem, couldn't get anywhere else, got in with me and said, why won't you take my insurance? And I said, well, okay, let's look at the cost. And we went out to the front. If I used his insurance, it would have been $139 for his visit plus some extra non-covered service. It would have been about $240. As it was when he saw me as a brand new patient, full complete exam, treatment, everything, $130. I was like, I saved you over $100. I go, maybe you should buy me coffee. And I got you in and treated you, you know, and then I have follow-up visits that are less than some of these horrific co-pays and deductibles. So patients have got to demand price transparency, competition, and then the final thing I was going to say, they're replacing physicians with mid-level non-physicians. I'm sorry, but when you go in and instead of seeing your cardiologist, you're seeing a nurse practitioner or a PA, or instead of seeing the specialist, you're seeing a mid-level, you are not getting the same care. They did not do the training we did. They are trained on team-based. No one is taking responsibility of you. They're following algorithms. It's totally different. And it's not the same.
It's not, and it's not effective. I can't tell you how many people I see as a second opinion because they've gone to the nurse practitioner. No offense, okay? It's just, it is what it is, all right? They've gone to the urgent care. They've gone to the nurse practitioner. They got some strange diagnosis. I'm like, what? It's not like even... From a physiological standpoint, some of the things I've been told that the patients told me they were told was like, that doesn't even make sense. But it's costing you more. By the time you come to see the doctor after the third visit of something, you've just spent all this money and you're not better. So convenience and what's trendy and what they're trying to drive people to is not standard of care. They're trying to make it that way, but it's not. And it costs people more money. I can't tell you. I'm sure you've seen the same thing. We've gone from us doctors being the front line of care to, as you said, the mid-levels. But the cost has gone up exponentially because there's more testing done, more medications given, because people don't understand the pathophysiology of something. It's not a knock. It's just training. You and I spent 4 years in medical school. And then we both did 5 or 6 years of specialty training in general surgery and in our specialty. I'm sorry, but that does not equal 18 months of training, sometimes online with no patient care. I'm sorry. If you start to look at apples and oranges, they're not the same. It's not a value statement. It just is a statement of fact. If you have a head cold and you don't need an antibiotic and you're just going for a regular routine, okay, I get that, but I just saw a commercial. It freaked me out. CVS in Atlanta has a health source, whatever. The person is snoring, and so the wife, they go up to CVS, and the nurse practitioner prescribes a prescription for a sleep study. Then they get the sleep study. The guy has sleep apnea. They never saw a doctor now. And then CVS dispenses the CPAP machine. Hello? I mean, this is what they're doing. They're cutting out the doctor. Did the patient really need all that? Did the patient have a nasal infection that's causing them to have nasal congestion and it's a different treatment? It's always about what, follow the money. They want to capture the patient. They want to give you the medication that you'll have fortunately, to need every day for the rest of your life, and cut out the thinking part of healthcare, which is us.
It is. It's the ultimate conflict of interest. If you have Aetna and you're forced to go to CVS, to one of these healthcare hubs, see a nurse who is employed by CVS who will write you a prescription to buy at CVS.
Mm-hmm.
Are you kidding me? It's unbelievable. I'm like you. You know, you and I have been around long enough, and we spent the hours and hours and years in the hospitals and in the ER and in the OR seeing what can happen and how to take care of that patient. And I am seeing things now I've never seen in my life. And I think that nurse practitioners and physician assistants are amazing as long as they are on the team with the physician in control. Now that they're going out on their own, I literally have seen things in the eye. I never knew this could look like this. I never knew that if you take this herpes infection and actually put it on steroids, the cornea could get this bad. You know, there's so many things now that that's why I call it the experiment on the American people. An accountable DARE organization. And, you know, we as physicians are kind of bailing them all out, and the patients are taking it. The patients need to say, absolutely not. That medication was wrong, or I needed this med.
Mm-hmm.
That care was wrong. And like you said, you know, when they come in, if they need an MRI scan, I can send them across the street for $200. If they go to their insurance and they make them stay at the hospital, it's $2,000.
Mm-hmm.
I can get a lab. You know, I can get a CBC and check their blood work for $4.
Mm-hmm.
They don't need to use their insurance. They can pay direct through transparency, see physicians who put them first, not populations, and not look at the computer and enter data, but who look at them in the eye and examine them and lay hands on and know them and know that when they came in, gosh, you've lost a lot of weight since you came last in. Is this a good thing or is this a bad thing? Do you have cancer? Have you been on a diet? Are you on your meds or are you not? Yes, you may be 80, but you are perfectly healthy enough to have this operation.
Exactly.
Or no, you do or don't need. You know because you're the expert. And you're going to also, when we look at those patients in the eye, we are going to want to give them the absolute best value, best cost. I my compunction is I never want to charge a patient. I'd love to do everything for free. And you know what? One of my greatest blessings is being able to do true charity care for people that literally are uninsured and don't have the money.
Mm-hmm.
And government, in a way, the insurance government tries to stop us from doing that. Because I've opted out, I can. When we look at the patient in the eye, we want it to be affordable for them. We don't want it to be so expensive. And when they're at their deductible, they don't care anymore. Because it's like, if somebody else is paying, there has to be accountability.
Well, you know, the sad part is, and you just made a statement, I want people to understand that. If you're in Medicare, you're one of the providers for it, one of the doctors, I hate the word provider, but one of the doctors for it, you cannot give charity care. It's illegal, right? If you can't underbill, you can't give someone a discount, that will give you fined or jailed. That's a stupid system. That you want to actually have empathy and compassion for your patient and give them a break, the government will frown on that and take you out. That's ridiculous. That system is broken, and the only way to break it is to not use it. Now, you know, what's really neat, I don't know if you knew this, I just found this out, that the government unhooked Medicare from your Social Security. So if you decide you don't want to have Medicare, was it Part A? You don't have to. You won't lose your Social Security anymore, which is awesome because before you were locked into a system where you had to be, a victim in it. Otherwise, you'd have to give up all the money that you're entitled to. So I think the government, the administration is working in our favor. We need, as physicians, to educate our patients so that they can make informed choices, not out of fear, right? But out of abundance. The system, if you and I and all the people in direct primary care were able to get our message out, that would change the dynamics. It's not a system of lack. It really isn't. If we had price transparency, I think a majority of our population could afford health care. And if the hospitals stopped being able to gouge with their facility fees and these trumped-up charges, people would not go bankrupt. And if they change the tax system so that if your patient can't afford it, you can write it off and actually have a tax deduction, what part of that is really hard, right? Because you wouldn't come after your patient. You would give charity care. Patients could be seen sooner. There's so many little things that can be done that doesn't cost anybody anything, but helps the patient.
You know, you're exactly right. We can afford, the United States of America can afford to take care of our patients. What we can't afford to do is take care of our patients and layers upon layers upon layers of leeches.
No.
And that's what we've got to stop. We've got to debride the wound and go back to taking care of our patients. And, the administration is really trying. You are exactly right. You know, under Clinton's administration, they said if you give up your Part A Medicare, then you lose all your Social Security. Are you kidding me? Yeah. Now, what in the world? That's extortion almost. So that is so important. Why all of a sudden, if you have health insurance or you have a situation that you like, and all of a sudden you turn 65, you're forced on Medicare with all the, you know, problems with that. What in the world? So you're right. We need to have patients be aware and be in charge and let the good, you know, that was a good thing that government was doing, was uncoupling that and letting people keep their Social Security and make a choice. But, you know, we can do better. We can afford it. Things don't cost as much as they say they do. If we just took that money, for example, the $1 billion the first year of trying to do that MIPS thing I was talking about earlier, mm-hmm. we will always have a small group of patients in the United States of America that have disabilities and have to bless their hearts. We love them. They're very, very sick. They will never be able to work. They need to be cared for. We need to have a way to take care of them. If we took all the money we're wasting on systems that don't work, if we just got rid of MIPS right now and took that $1 billion, and, you know, the state, we could take care of our sweet, dear patients that need to be taken care of.
Mm-hmm. It's not hard,
is it? It's not hard.
No.
We need to quit implementing and complying with insanity. We need to quit being afraid. And it takes patients standing up, and it takes our colleagues standing up.
I think you've said a mouthful. You know, in the 30 seconds, this show goes so quickly, but in the 30 seconds we have left, again, how can people reach you?
Okay, so I'd love you to just reach out directly on Twitter at Chris Held, MD, KKS Held, and go to aapsonline.org, aapsonline.org, and join as a patient. We will connect you with whoever you want to be connected to find out about direct care, to have all your questions answered. Our motto is all for the patient.
I think that's
thank you so much.
Oh, it's a pleasure. It's a great place to leave it. And again, God bless everything you do. And I can't wait to have you back on again in the future.
Oh, God bless you. I can't wait to be on and see you again. Thank you for all you do.
Thanks, Chris. And thank you for listening to Living in the Solution.
Revolutionary Talk for Revolutionary Times. Liberty Talk FM.